Sergeant, Sergeant, holy crap, Bradford got hit by lightning. Calm down, soldier. Who is this? Identify yourself. Due to my unusual status as Sergeant E5, the chevron with the three pairs of stripes, a designation which we were told the Army was phasing out in favor of Specialist E5, my leadership skills were often called upon to do regular duty, like guarding the nearby missile silos a mile from camp. Actually, Spec 5s were doing this duty too, so I really only had to pull Sergeant of the Guard about once a month. Sergeants were supposed to be used when leading troops, and this particular guard duty, we had with me 8 men at 4 corners stations around 16 abandoned missile silos, all behind a 20-foot-high fence. There hadn't been any missiles in the silos for some time, maybe since the end of the Cold War. We were in Germany. Wars were over in Europe, while Vietnam carried on. No missiles, but perhaps 1,000 gallons of olive drab paint were at stake. Flammable, they needed to be in a secure place as well. Why not guard it against theft and possible sabotage and exercise the troops at the same time? Olive drab wasn't a popular color, but we guarded against our own army stealing it. It was busy work, for our battalion had no real duties yet. This one particular night in Schwabach, Germany, there was a very nasty thunderstorm going on. Lightning, thunder, rain. And it was my duty to stay awake at the radio at the barracks command center. Also, I was to wake up the next 4 guards and drive them out in a jeep to replace the 4 already guarding the paint. I had an assistant, a PFC, who would wake me if I fell asleep. If he too fell asleep, the guard situation would deteriorate, the paint would be compromised, the free world would collapse. Guard duty, a 24-hour assignment with 4 hours sleep shifts, then 4 hours on duty. Sometimes it was difficult to catch enough sleep, and guards continued it at their stations. The missile silo facility was 16 giant mounds in a square fenced-in field. Each corner mound had a small wooden shack placed on top, very similar to an outhouse. They were 4 foot by 4 foot square, with large windows on every side. The windows protected us from the elements, and in summer, screens replaced the windows. A small kerosene heater was supplied in winter. The guard's job was to keep it full of kerosene, stored in the same bunker nearest them with the paint. Each guard was supplied with an M16 already assigned to them, plus a handheld radio phone for answering calls each hour of their duty. Men would bring snacks, a book to read by flashlight, maybe a pocket radio with earphone. No MP3 players back then. Each man had an armband like the military police, MP, but with the letters GD for guard duty. Mine was SG for Sergeant of the Guard, and I had my usual .45 caliber pistol at my side, complete with empty clip. I was a conscientious objector, after all. As everyone in the battalion pulled guard duty, even most officers, the whole thing ran smoothly and efficiently from the day we arrived as a 500-man battalion in the fall of 1970. But on this particular night, with rains blowing in extreme up to 50 miles an hour, temperatures still springtime in the high 30s, things were anything but all right. It was about 2 a.m., only 6 hours from the end of our 24-hour shift, when a new crew would take over. The thunder followed a bright flash of cloud-to-ground lightning by only seconds. It was getting closer. Then the frantic call came over the radio. Sergeant! Sergeant! Holy crap! Bradford got hit by lightning! Calm down, soldier. Who is this? Identify yourself. The soldier gave his name and shack. Singleton, Guard Shack 4. Close enough to witness what happened in Guard Shack 3. Apparently Bradford couldn't be seen in the guard shack just before the strike, as he was probably sitting on the floor sleeping. When the lightning hit the shack, it exploded outward, sending all the lumber in every direction as if a bomb had hit it. Singleton couldn't see if Bradford was lying in the debris or not. I suggested he go over to Shack 3 and see if he could find Bradford and see if he was all right. I suggested, too, that if he wasn't breathing, he should attempt CPR on him. I would be there shortly. Bradford was already known as Mr. Lucky. Upon entering the service, army dentists decided he had a rare gum disease, so they pulled all of his beautiful teeth, every one. It took 6 months for his new dentures to catch up to him in Germany. We all went out to celebrate his new teeth. On our way home, we crossed a bridge in downtown Nuremberg. Bradford felt sick and threw up over the rail of the bridge, losing his dinner. And, of course, his new dentures. Same day he got them. Upon reevaluation, it was determined that he did not have a gum disease after all. He was no Mr. Lucky. I called for an ambulance from Frankfurt, knowing that they would be more than 45 minutes getting to us. I grabbed my raincoat, a handset, and a large 4-cell flashlight. My PFC stayed behind to receive any calls from Frankfurt, and I left him the task of waking up the officer of the guard, which that night was my commo captain, Captain Hirsch. I never knew what OGs did after a phone call, but was glad to see my captain from my day job as radio teletype team chief. I liked him, trusted him, and respected his judgment. He arrived at the guard shack shortly after I did. When I arrived, Singleton was standing next to the now-seated Bradford. He was apparently okay, even as smoke rose from his body. He didn't remember what happened to him, and he was more than a bit dazed. Upon inspection of the debris, the biggest remaining piece of lumber was about 2 inches, spread out in a 50-foot radius. We could tell that he had been sitting on the floor of the shack, his rifle now 10 feet away. He no longer wore his helmet, which was about 20 feet away, a giant 6-inch hole in the top. The captain and I determined the lightning had struck the shack, hit the rifle, bounced to the helmet, exploded it off Bradford's head, the current then running through his body, escaping out his right foot to the ground. The sole of his right boot was gone. A little melted sole left on the boot, still smoking. Yes, it was a steel-reinforced boot like Rangers wore, actually against regs in our camp. We found the sole nearby. There was something odd about Bradford's look. Then the captain, myself, and Singleton all realized together what was different. Every tiny speck of hair on his head was burnt to the skin. Even his eyebrows and lashes were gone. The skin on his head was covered with second- and third-degree burns, making it almost look like he had hair. The hair in his nose was singed, as he could smell his own burnt hair and skin. Same, too, on the bottom of his right foot, all the skin covered in burns, and actually still steaming, probably from the burnt leather. M-16s, the guards carried, were required to have their bayonets attached during guard duty. Bradford's was split down the middle of the entire blade. The plastic handguard used to hold the rifle with the left hand was half-melted. Surely the path of the lightning. Bradford was thrown out of the shack with the explosion. He would remember bits later, but his being asleep and sitting down probably saved his life. PFC Bradford was 19 years old. He was hospitalized for a short time while his skin grew back on the bottom of his foot. He was sent stateside. As a draftee, his tour was over. They gave him some money, too, compensating his pain. The Army was at fault here, rather nature, and we all missed him. Each guard shack should have been supplied with a lightning rod, an external ground that ran deep enough into the ground to absorb any size lightning. This would happen, and also the use of plastic rifles with ceramic barrels, something that was experimental but appropriate for trial on our mounds. Viewed as a training exercise, our guard duty eventually was curtailed, and the paint stored at each individual military installation instead of one big pile. This all happened after I left Germany and the Army 3 weeks later.